the words of my mouth and the meditations of all our hearts be acceptable in your sight, O Lord, our strength and our Redeemer. Amen. Please be seated. So, my friends, I have a confession to make, which is I've never participated in a foot washing ceremony. And I've probably attended church on every Monday, Thursday for the last 45 years or so since I was a teenager. I've seen plenty of them, but I've always stayed in the pew. And I don't think I'm alone in this. I guess we'll find out in a few minutes how that's going to go. Some of y'all who are here tonight might be undecided. You might be maybe challenging yourself to do it or trying to get your courage up. Now you only have a few more minutes to do that. And there might be faithful Trinity Parish parishioners who are at home tonight watching the live stream because they didn't want to be anywhere near that basin down there. And it's, you know, I thought a lot about why I haven't done it. And, I mean, obviously, there's the obvious thing, which is once we're adults, the only, you know, our feet are off limits to the great majority of other people. Only somebody with whom you're in a very close relationship, or a medical professional, or a pedicurist, possibly. But other than that, you know, that's a very personal, intimate part of our body, our feet. But when I dig deeper in my own feelings about it, I think really what the hesitation is on my part is the vulnerability of it. And the vulnerability kind of goes both ways, because there's, if I were hypothetically to do it, there's my vulnerability in allowing, you know, my naked feet to be displayed and then somebody pour water on them and dry them off. But also the awkwardness of the vulnerability of the person who's doing it, the person who's washing my feet, but kind of it makes me uncomfortable to think, you know, if somebody's kneeling or stooping before me and washing my feet. So there's that vulnerability. I'm uncomfortable by the other person's, made uncomfortable by the other person's vulnerability. But it's, you know, although it's an ancient ceremony, it's still relatively new in the Episcopal Church. I mean, we have long timelines in the Episcopal Church. It was basically reintroduced with the Book of Common Prayer of 1979. Prior to that, it was, I think, safe to say it was unknown in the American Church. In our Anglican brothers and sisters in England, it had kind of devolved into the monarch, the English monarch hands out money to designated poor people on Maundy Thursday, and that's kind of a leftover of, you know, it saves them from having to wash anybody's feet. When the 1979 prayer book came out, I think for those of y'all who remember were Episcopalians back then, most of the controversy was about the modern language. That's what we all focused on. But that really wasn't the point. That really was not what that book was about. The new prayer book, same new, 45 years old, I still call it the new prayer book, was the product of years of theological reflection on the meaning of baptism, on the nature of the church, and on the ministry of the laity. I don't know if any of you have looked at the catechism. Perhaps most of you have never looked at it. But the catechism in our prayer book lists four orders of ministry. And guess who comes first? Does anybody know the answer? It's the laity. It's the laity take priority, and then bishops, priests, and deacons. This, obviously not a completely new idea, but not an idea that had really been, you know, foregrounded before. And then there's the baptismal liturgy, in the 1979 book, which, you know, prior to 1979, the baptismal covenant was, you know, renouncing the devil and all his works and things of that nature. And that stuff is still in there. But there were those important additions that were new. Will you seek and serve Christ in all persons? Will you strive for justice and peace? Will you respect the dignity of every human being? Those things were kind of brought in as the essence of the baptismal covenant. So there's a lot going on in this ceremony tonight, and there's a lot going on as far as why we do it and why it's in our prayer book. So I think most of y'all know the Gospel of John is the only one of the four Gospels with this story in it. And the other three, the Synoptic Gospels, y'all have heard that term, I think, particularly if you've been attending the Sunday Forum during Lent. Matthew, Mark, and Luke, they're called Synoptic because they have a lot of parallels and they can kind of be seen or read together. And the Gospel of John is kind of its own thing. It's very different from the other three. And it's really remarkable that John is the one with this story because it's John that makes the biggest claims for Jesus. It's John that begins, "In the beginning was the Word." It's John that identifies Jesus as pre-existing. It's John where Jesus says things, "I and the Father are one," or in the lesson from a couple of weeks ago, where he explicitly identifies himself as God's Son, and God so loved the world that he gave his only Son, etc. So it's really remarkable that this episode is in that gospel, because remember, it's the foot washing. Try to project yourself back 2,000 years, if you can, and imagine what the streets were like, okay? So they're dusty, they're full of garbage and, you know, animal waste and what have you. So if you were invited to a dinner party at some, you know, like the top 1% that gave dinner parties in the ancient world, you were invited to a dinner party, you go to the house, and when you step over the threshold, a slave would wash your feet before you went into the dining room. So it's an extraordinary act of servanthood on Jesus' part to carry out this act. And, you know, the disciples resist. Well, not all of them, at least we're not told, but Peter in particular tries to refuse because for him, Jesus is the leader, Jesus is somebody above him. And, you know, maybe in the same way I'm uncomfortable with the thought of somebody washing my feet, he doesn't want to be. It's not so much that he's embarrassed to be vulnerable to Jesus, but I think he's embarrassed for Jesus to be vulnerable before him, to stoop down and kneel before him. And it's really very remarkable. So, at the end of my last sermon a couple of weeks ago, I gave a homework assignment. And this, like I said, there was no test. I have no way of knowing if you ever did it. But I think it is an important exercise to try to experience this story tonight as somebody who was reading it for the first time, you know, in antiquity world. And we get a little bit, you know, these stories become familiar. We hear them in fragments in the lectionary throughout the year. So the homework assignment would be to read the Gospel of John straight through. You can wait till after Easter, wait till after Easter dinner. Read it straight through, and when you get to this episode, I think you'll agree it's a shocking it's shocking and surprising for Jesus to humble himself in this way. It's been expressed by the English poet, he's a priest and a poet, Malcolm Guite, in a couple of lines from his sonnet for Maundy Thursday. He says, "In vain we search the heavens high above. The God of love is kneeling at our feet." And in the bidding or invitation to the foot washing in a moment, you're going to hear that you, the laity, are sharing the royal priesthood of Christ. And I hope you won't let my hesitation about foot washing dissuade you from accepting that invitation.